This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, forgive me if I feel a little, like, kind of dirty this morning. I'm still kind of washing off after last night's play-in game between the L.A. Lakers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Well, all right, so this is the great NBA experiment, isn't it? This is the thing that's going to last to the ends of time now. I don't know if they'll expand this. I hope they don't, but I actually don't mind it. Last night, we had two play-in games to determine the seven seed in the Eastern and the Western Conference. The first game on the road, the Atlanta Hawks beat the Miami Heat, beat them pretty soundly, had a double-digit lead in the first half, never really looked back, out-rebounded Miami all night long, and they go on as a seven seed to face the Boston Celtics. It was the second game of the night that was a little more intriguing to me, because given that the Lakers had won 9 of their last 11 games and were healthy, LeBron James and Anthony Davis and everybody else, everything was rolling along good. They were closing out the season strong. They had started 2-10, and everybody made a big deal about how much time LeBron was missing, how much time Anthony Davis was missing. There was all these injuries that were piling up, and it looked like the season was falling apart for the Lakers. But they managed to right the ship enough to get back into the conversation. And not only did they get into the conversation, that they had a seven seed, and they were actually hosting the play-in game. So if they didn't have the play-in tournament, the Lakers would have made the playoffs outright. Again, outright as a seven seed. But because of the play-in tournament, they had been on the outside looking in. They barely were in. Then they got in a little stronger, and they started climbing up a little bit. And they were facing a Minnesota Timberwolves team last night that was shorthanded. Rudy Gobert, who punched Kyle Anderson on Sunday in a team huddle, he was suspended. Jaden McDaniel punched a wall. He hurt his hand. So they were coming in not only shorthanded, but, you know, sort of deflated, if you will. But nevertheless, the game went on, and Minnesota had a lead, and Minnesota had a double-digit lead, and the Lakers clawed their way back into the game. But boy, oh boy, was it sloppy. And I feel like this. I know people want to react and to that game last night and say, hey, look, the Lakers, I can't see them getting past Memphis. And that should be the sentiment for everybody today if you watched that game last night. Whether you were living out on the West Coast and you watched it, or you were on the East Coast and stayed up to watch it, it was not a well-played game. The Lakers did everything that they possibly could to give Minnesota every chance of winning that game. Every chance. Minnesota went cold in the fourth quarter. The Lakers still found ways to turn the ball over and make a mess of things. It was a complete disaster.
They were literally passing it to him, Tony. You say turn the ball over.
Bouncing
the
ball off their leg. I mean, what was going on?
Here, take this.
Goodness. And LeBron scored 30. And Anthony Davis was double-teamed all night. And he's got a neck stinger and whatnot. So Dennis Schroeder, LeBron drives the lane, kicks out to Dennis Schroeder, hits a three with 1.4 seconds remaining. And the game should have been over by then.
Yeah.
Right? The Timberwolves are inbounding the ball. Mike Conley's got it in the corner, and he just chucks it up. Just like, I'm falling. But then Anthony Davis hits him on the way down. I couldn't believe it. Like, let the guy shoot an off-balance corner three, for the love of Pete.
I mean, he hit the backboard.
Hit the backboard.
That's how ugly that shot was.
Close. And Anthony Davis hits him. And he goes, and Mike Conley goes to the free throw line to knock down three free throws. First one rolls in. Thank God he made that one. Can you imagine being at the line for three?
Well, that
missing, like, oh, great.
The only thought that was going through my mind after he made that third one was, this guy has the stones of a Greek god.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, that's pressure.
It
now
really
I know,
is pressure.
I know that, you know, hey, you lose the game, you're not out of it. You know, you guys get, you know, they
no,
get to
get
play again
chance
on Friday.
Yeah. Your back isn't quite against the wall.
But I can't remember if it was Kevin Harlan or Reggie Miller that said it, that, you know, whoever wins this game, you know, the bonus thing that they get is they don't play again until Saturday.
That's right, yeah.
That's a huge rest period.
That's a huge rest period.
And all I was thinking about was the Lakers and saying, God, you guys need that rest.
Minnesota has to play Friday and then jump into a series on Sunday.
Yeah.
So that's the penalty of losing last night's game. And they did, And in overtime, the Lakers went on to win that game, and it was sloppy. We deal in a lot of hyperbole in sports. That's sort of the nature of it. The Lakers have plenty of days to get their act together. I don't think Darwin Ham and LeBron James and Anthony Davis thought last night's game was well played. They can't. When they see the film, they know it's not well. They don't even have to see the film. They know it wasn't well played. They know that that is not going to be the way you're going to beat the Memphis Grizzlies in seven games.
I think first thing they need to do is, I mean, all day today if they're practicing or if they have a day of, maybe they're resting today, but tomorrow during practice, just passing the ball in.
Absolutely. Good,
that
point.
Should be,
good point.
That should be number one.
Defensively, they were pretty good. Offensively, they were, whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. And it was, you know what's the thing? The other thing, too, is you're LeBron is not going to be able to carry this team to a win in the first round against Memphis. He can't do it. He's not going to be able to do it. Anthony Davis has to be more aggressive. He has to be way more aggressive. He had 24 points last night. Hard-fought 24. He's got to be more aggressive. And he needs help. Like, there was one moment I thought Austin Reeves was going to be the star of the game. I'd even put it out on Twitter. He had a couple of big buckets in the first half, and then he went cold. Everybody was cold. And so the Lakers are going to have to play a lot better if we're going to carry the narrative that people have been caring about them for the final 10 games, 11 games of the season, which was, hey, this team's actually playing better. They're really efficient on offense. Defensively, they're better. Look, this is not the same team that's been dealing with all these injuries. Watch out. It doesn't matter how you get in. It's how well you're playing. Everybody wanted to jump on this. And that's one of the reasons I found last night intriguing, because last night I was – I mean, I got through the Atlanta-Miami game, which relatively – I mean, that was really nothing. But I got to a point with – I couldn't wait to see the Lakers play the Minnesota Timberwolves, because I was kind of thinking this could be the – if the Lakers play well, this becomes a very scary team in a Western Conference. That's, again, very, very loaded. But they're not going to be Memphis playing like that. They know that, and we'll see when that series starts. Now, tonight, we have two other games, and these are the 9-10 games. This is where your back is against the wall. There's no tomorrow. You have to win or lose, or if you lose, you're out. And that's going to be the Chicago Bulls and the Toronto Raptors and the the New Orleans Pelicans, the Oklahoma City Thunder. New Orleans was once the 3 seed in the Western Conference when they had Zion Williamson averaging 26 points a game. Now Zion is out. He pulled a hamstring in January, hasn't been back since. Brandon Ingram is carrying the load. Oklahoma City is a bright, bright young basketball team. Little inexperienced, a little green, but nevertheless, they're a fun team. For a young team, they're fun. Yeah, it's what kind of want you see as a team grows. The winner of that game tonight will get Minnesota in Minnesota. We'll likely have Rudy Gobert back because he served the suspension for punching Kyle Anderson. But they're not getting Jaden McDaniels back. But this is really more about the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers can talk about surviving, and they can laugh off Anthony Davis's brain fart, but that almost cost him the game. I mean, who knows what happened in overtime, right? That's serious. I mean, you can laugh it off now because it's probably more of a relief of stress. Like, hey man, that was really tough, but you can't make those kind of mistakes. You can't make those kind of mistakes. You can't go guard a guy on the three and bump into him on a 3-pointer that's off balance. Come on. Right. But in the end, the Lakers do pull it out. But it was not a well-played game. If you missed it last night, you might have just woke up to find out an overtime win. Devil's in the details. The Atlanta Hawks, they went to South Florida and beat. I wasn't that surprised. I thought these teams were kind of equal. But I was really surprised how well they beat Miami. I mean, they really beat Miami. I mean, they just got out of the gate strong, kept it strong, and finished off the Heat, and now Miami will play the second. They'll play the winner of the Chicago Bulls in the Toronto Raptors game from tonight. But Trae Young had a very nice game. The bench was fantastic for the Atlanta Hawks. They out-rebounded Miami all night long. And this is an Atlanta team that recently had hired Quinn Snyder, formerly of the Utah Jazz, to be their head coach. And he is finding tweaks, and he's finding things to work with. The Atlanta Hawks played a very good game last night, and Trae Young is an outstanding player. They don't have a chance against the Celtics. I'm sorry. They just do not have a chance against the Celtics.
You sound like Barkley.
That's right. That's right. So unlike the West, where you can start seeing cracks in the armor of a lot of teams, right? you know, a lot of teams are one-way teams. They're good offensively. They're not so good defensively. You know, the top three in the West are solid teams, but you can also find even better situations in the four through six. The East isn't like that, as we said yesterday. The Celtics are good offensively, and they're really good defensively, and Atlanta is not going to out-rebound the Celtics like they out-rebounded the Miami Heat last night. So the East is an entirely different story. These teams that are in the play-in tournament, congratulations. You want to get in a seven-game series. I'm sure ownership is happy that you'll get to host at least two playoff games to make the kind of revenue that comes from playoff games. But no one's beating Milwaukee, and no one's beating Boston in the first round of the playoffs. That's not happening. And the Philadelphia 76ers are not going to lose to Brooklyn, and the Cleveland Cavaliers and the New York Knicks can duke it out. That might be the fun series in the East. But nevertheless, did the play-in tournament work? Yeah, it worked. It does. I thought it was kind of exciting, to be honest with you.
I mean, it was a great atmosphere.
It really was.
And I was very proud of Crypt.com or
Crypto.com Arena.
I was very proud of the people in there because that was a very energetic crowd.
Energetic crowd, yeah. It had, like you said, neither team had their backs to the wall, but it was close enough to feel the urgency.
There
was a tomorrow, but you didn't really want to go to tomorrow. Like, you really needed to clean the – why don't you take care of business? You're right. The prize between losing the game and winning that game is – you almost get a week to prepare for your first-round opponent. Whereas now Minnesota's got to concentrate on whoever wins tonight. And they got to prepare for that. And then they got to quickly turn around and prepare for the Denver Nuggets, who they're going to get as an 8 seed if they get that far. So, yeah, play-in tournament was a success.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. So again, two more play-in tournament games tonight in the NBA. We've been talking about the Lakers this morning, and they're barely winning against Minnesota, a team shorthanded and had a lead and then went cold, and the Lakers still was like, hell yeah, you're not out of it. Don't you worry. You're not out of it. No, not against us. You're not out of it. Anyway, you said to me you had a question you wanted to ask me.
I did. Yes. And I'm curious to get your answer, okay? Because so late in that game, LeBron has the ball, and he's, you know, playing out the clock.
Right.
And, you know, we all are assuming the same thing. He's taking the final shot.
Sure, right.
And he drives to the hoop. The entire Timberwolves team collapsed on him. I mean, there was all five of them had the same thoughts. Like, we got to just make sure that this ball doesn't go in because it's a tied game. And he passes off to Dennis Schroeder. Then Dennis Schroeder nails the three.
Yes.
Mike, the only thought that went through my mind was, what kind of backlash would he get had Dennis missed a shot?
He gets the, but he's that's a great question. He gets this a lot. He does this a lot.
He did it
in Miami, too. There was one time in the playoffs or the finals, I think, where he found Chris Bosh. One time, and dished it to Chris Bosh when they were like, you were kind of open. Like, why didn't you take the shot? Why does he insist on being the guy that facilitates others to make these game-ending shots? But I think you're right. I think he does this a lot, and it makes people kind of crazy because they want him to go to the basket, draw the foul, get the bucket. Because we've seen the other superstars doing that. Like,
yeah.
Kobe and Michael went to the hole.
No, they would have. They never would have passed it off. Are you kidding?
Never.
But, I mean, you know, we look at it, it's like it was a brilliant play.
Really brilliant, right.
Because, yeah, you know, he knew that everyone was coming after him. Five people are, you know, dropping down on him immediately, leaving guys wide open. And there's Schroeder just sitting there over the side, just wide open.
Yeah.
But if Schroeder misses, you know, I mean, if he misses, the game stays tied. But... you know, you're looking at it going, LeBron, you could have won the game. And, I mean, how much backlash would that guy – he would have – people would – I mean, that would have been the number one narrative today.
Yeah, he's kind of a bizarre – the narrative is with LeBron is that he always looks at a basketball court and he says, okay, what's – like I'm playing chess, right? Like I'm going to drive, but if the defense comes in, I know there's somebody out there. Whereas other megastars, as we mentioned, have a tendency to just say, do it fine, themselves. I don't care. I'm taking it. I'm taking it myself. I've argued on LeBron's behalf when people just lazily accuse him of being a ball hog. He's not. He's not a ball hog at all. In fact, he assists all the time. I mean, it's just a lazy narrative that people want to say who just don't like LeBron because they just don't like LeBron. They're just not watching enough basketball. But there is a point where you do want the best player to do. Dennis Schroeder is a fine shooter. That's fine. He was open. He's a fine shooter.
Yeah.
But we want the best player on the court to be taking those last shots. My percentage of him taking the last shot seems a lot greater than even a wide open Dennis Schroeder in the corner, right? As good as Dennis Schroeder can be, I would still want LeBron James driving to the hole rather than Dennis Schroeder.
Listen, and LeBron's riding the hot hand at that moment because he just nailed a three to tie
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, yeah, there was a couple of mishaps where the Lakers couldn't inbound the ball, whatever. I mean, whatsoever. It was almost comical how they just kept giving it to him. But, I mean, yeah, it's the only thing I could think of was like, God, if he had missed that shot, you know, and they have to lose the game. It can't go into overtime and they win it there because then, this destroys it. But if Schroeder misses that shot and the Timberwolves win the game, LeBron is – the finger's pointed at him.
No, I think you're right.
Immediately.
I think you're right. And there were a couple of situations when he was with other teams in the finals or in the playoffs where he did that, and people have said, well, why aren't you taking that? And he always talks about better look, facilitating guys, allowing guys to get open by drawing. Like you said, the defense is collapsing. But he's had this sort of narrative around him where he – almost is looking to see who else is open rather than trying to make a shot that might be kind of difficult with the collapsing defense, but still he's LeBron James. I mean, maybe he's a 38-year-old LeBron James, but he was doing it in his 20s too. He was always forcing that. So that's a really good question because I kind of agree with you. It was I wasn't that surprised that he kicked it out to Schroeder, but at the same time in a tie game, I thought, go to the basket.
I was with you. I wasn't surprised that he threw it away or threw it to Schroeder, but at the same time, it's like, you know, he's driving to the hoop. I assumed he was going to do that because you don't need a three. You just need a two.
Right.
Maybe he draws a foul going up to the basket.
So these play-in tournaments have raised one issue that I don't know if it's an issue or not, but it was talked about yesterday, which is, so like we said in the first segment, the winners last night got to advance to face off against the second seeds in the conference. So Atlanta's playing Boston, and now we know the Lakers playing Memphis. That means that the Lakers wake up today focused on the Memphis Grizzlies this weekend. And the Atlanta Hawks wake up today, and they focus on the Boston Celtics. But on the flip side, the Celtics and the Grizzlies, who have been off since Sunday, they now wake up today knowing they're facing the Lakers and the Atlanta Hawks. So now the preparation can properly begin for both the 2 seed and the 7 seed. The 1 seeds, Denver and Milwaukee, while being at a tremendous advantage over whoever comes out as an 8, are still in the process of preparing for an NBA game. They won't know who their opponent will be until Friday. So they're going to practice preparing for 2 teams and no, then they'll know who it is Friday night, and then they'll have basically one day to say, like we've talked about over the last couple of days, forget Team A, now going on with Team B. And it's made people say, boy, this is kind of unfair. My question is, would the NBA have taken a week off before the start of the postseason, or would they have started the playoffs Wednesday night if we didn't have the play-in tournament? So if we didn't have this, would we have waited a whole week until the Saturday games? It's possible, but I wonder if this is almost a non-starter controversy, because I feel like, well, we would have just gotten underway kind of like Wednesday night with a couple of games. So yeah, you would have known Sunday, but it's not like we would have given you a week to prepare. And to be honest with you, this is, I don't have a problem with this. I know people want to make it a big deal. First of all, if you're Milwaukee, You don't need a full week of practice to prepare for the 8 seed coming out of the West. And if you are the Denver Nuggets, you don't need a full week of preparation for the 8 seed out of the West. But you know why I like the way the play-in structure is? Because the 8 seed shouldn't have an advantage of a couple of days. You're an 8 seed, and you had to work through it all week in preparation for it. You should have 2 days to prepare. At least the Milwaukee Bucks and the Denver Nuggets are going into practices knowing that their pool of teams they have to prepare for is now down to 3 today. Tonight, it'll be down to 2. And so they'll go into Thursday and Friday preparing for 2 teams for the game on Sunday. And so I don't feel all that bad for them. I think this is just a way to be there's no really fair way to do this. Look, the play-in tournament, if you want the play-in tournament, this is the only way they should do it. All right? They shouldn't do a round-robin sort of like bracket thing. That won't work. You take the 2 teams that are 7 and 8 and you say playing a game to determine the 7 seed. Winner goes. Loser, you're now fighting for the 8 spot. The 9 and 10 seeds, they should have their backs to the wall because they didn't earn one of the top 8 seeds in the regular season. You have to make positioning valuable. You can't say that the top 6 matter and then 7 through 10 are just a tournament with maybe one team. Like, that's not how this should be. The 7 and 8 seeds should be playing just a 1 game. Winner gets 7. 8 continues on to try to keep that 8 with a home game. This is the right way to do it. Not a best of 3. Not a you two play a best of 3 and then you two play a best of 3 or 7 plays 10 in a best of 3. Don't do it that way. Just do it the way this is. And if the ramifications are that Milwaukee and Denver this year and whoever the number one seeds have a shorter time to prepare for their opponent, I'm not going to lose sleep over that. I'm just not. I mean, I just think that the process of this was to avoid having teams near the bottom kind of tanking and kind of giving up if they're just far away enough that they can go, yeah, well, I'm 3 out with 5 left to play. I don't think it's worth it. But I'm a 10 seed, so I might keep the 10 seed and try to get into the play-in tournament. All right, coming up, we're going to stay in the NBA because tonight the New Orleans Pelicans are playing against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And there's a player that's not playing tonight. And should he be playing tonight? We'll give you the curious case of Zion Williamson next as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, coming up in hour 2, of course, we've got the good, the bad, and the dumb. Hour 3 this morning, we've got 2 guests talking NBA. We've got Kevin Ray, who's the Phoenix Suns TV play-by-play announcer, and then Kyle Draper, the Kings play-by-play announcer out in Sacramento. So those 2 teams gearing up for their first-round matchups. That'll be in hour number 3. And oh, by the way, the Tampa Bay Rays, they're now 11-0. They beat the Red Sox again last night, so... You know, the trek to 162-0 doesn't make itself. You got to go one game at a time. But they're on a roll now. But nevertheless, we'll get back into the NBA because tonight the New Orleans Pelicans find themselves in a play-in game in the 9-8 battle with the up-and-coming Oklahoma City Thunder. The Pelicans were once a 3 seed in the West, but that was early in the season. And Zion Williamson was playing, averaging 26 points per game. And it was the Zion that you wanted if you were a New Orleans Pelicans fan. He was healthy, had been out with a foot injury before, really hasn't been the full Zion. But then he was starting to play really well. He was leading the team in scoring. Again, 26 points per game is pretty great. They were winning games. And all of a sudden there was joy in New Orleans as this looked like it was heading towards, hey, look out, we're going to be threatening for a spot in the high end on the NBA playoffs. But then on January 2nd, he had a hamstring strain and never really came back and felt like there was some reaggravation. And so he said on Tuesday that he won't play again until he feels like Zion. So he's not going to play in the play-in tournament. Now, He also said he was healthy. But here's what he said. That what's holding him back is there's a mental hurdle on his injury. So there are times where he feels hesitation to make certain moves. He said, quote, physically, I'm fine. Now it's just a matter of when I feel like Zion. I know the atmosphere I'd be in based on in the playoff experience from last year. But he's unlikely to return at any point in the postseason, even though, again, he's healthy. He says that this is a mutual thing between him and the team. So the question that I have to ask is this. If you are the New Orleans Pelicans, how long do you let this go? Zion can say all the right things. I want to be out there. I want to play. I have this mental block. It prevents me from doing the things that I'm capable of doing. And those are all good things to, you know, want to make sure. You're like, hey, no, we don't want you at 80%. But also, we're paying you to play sometimes at 80%. I'm sorry, we are not paying you to only get you when everything's working. Mentally, physically, everything's 100%. Sometimes you have to drag yourself out there at 75%. Sometimes you have to drag yourself out there when you're mentally exhausted. Sometimes you have to drag yourself out there when we're on a back-to-back on a road trip. The circumstances can't always be perfect for you to do the job in which you're paying you to do, especially what we're paying you to do as the number one overall pick from a couple of years ago. I know I'm not accusing Williamson of ducking this. I'm not accusing him of trying to take the spotlight and not be under it, right? He played at Duke, for crying out loud, okay? So he's not a guy that was playing at a small school to avoid attention and happened to be the number one pick and fears the spotlight. I don't think it's that. But what has infiltrated him to a point now where he feels like the hesitation and the mental hurdle is enough to keep a healthy NBA player from playing in a very important NBA game? That's not going to go over well, and no matter how much people talk about mental health issues are really important, people need to take personal days now, all of those things. We now are recognizing how mental health and workplace fatigue have gotten to people. Is this going to go over well? If you admit that you're fine, healthy, you're fine. But when you get the basketball and you want to make a move, a certain move that is something that facilitates your production, you're hesitant to do so. If I'm the New Orleans Pelicans, I think I'd like to have a sit down and go, well, what exactly is the holdup? Like, we're not trying to be rude here, but, you know, we are in the playoffs. And what if we win this play-in tournament? We're going to get a first-round matchup with Denver. We think with you, we could beat Denver. We'll be honest. We're in the play-in tournament because for a good portion of the season, you didn't play for us. And we felt like if we got a full season from January 2nd through that entire month, through the entire month of February, the entire month of March, and into a little bit of early April, we would have been a lot better than a 9 seed. We would have been one of the teams that is up there not worrying about this. And if we're going to put all the teams that are 1 through 6, including even the Lakers, as potentially winning the conference because it's open, that's where we would have been if you had played a full season. Now, granted, we think you should have been out for the hamstring injury and recovering from that. But when you knew you were recovered from that and you still didn't want to play because of hesitation, how can we help you with that? Because this is something we can't do going forward. We can't have you in a situation where, as a big man with weight on those bones, you're going to get hurt, and then you decide, well, my recovery isn't so much physical. My recovery is more mental, and that's going to take a long time. And we, as fans and in the media, this is an old story. We do it all the time. We just did it with Lamar Jackson in the NFL, where we almost have to say, prove it that you're still hurt. Because all the doctors said Lamar Jackson should be back in, what, 2 to 4 weeks? And then it was 4 to 6 weeks, and then it was not at all. In this case, Lamar at least admitted or kept saying over and over again that he was hurt. He kept saying, I'm not recovered. I'm not healthy. If I was healthy, I'd play, but I'm not healthy now. In this case, Zion Williamson isn't even saying, no, it's still bothering me. Nope, I'm still feel it. No, when I walk upstairs, I feel it. He's not even saying that. He's saying, no, I'm healthy. It's right between the ears. That's the problem. New Orleans with Zion Williamson, much better team than what you're going to see tonight. And Brandon Ingram is doing everything he possibly can to carry this team where it is right now. Now, I think his teammates would be, on the surface, I would think his teammates would be like, yeah, you know, I play hurt. But I wonder if this day and age, they're more supportive of that. Because again, we have sort of turned the corner on mental hurdles that people have. And I don't know if any of you have ever suffered an injury on the job, it isn't easy to just come right back. I get it. And we're mere mortals, right? If you've had a knee injury or a broken leg or a broken arm or whatever it is, it takes a while to get back to doing what you're doing, especially if you're going back to doing the things that caused you the injury in the first place. Maybe you're a recreational skier. Maybe you're a runner, right? Maybe whatever it is. Even if you're not doing it professionally or anything like that, just maybe you're just a rec league person. Yeah, I can get it. I get it. It's difficult. I understand. But I can't imagine the Pelicans just sitting around and allowing him to have these conversations without doing something about it. I wonder how much the team is doing about this. Does he need to see somebody because he needs help between the ears? How are you trying to get a solid investment back on the court? And it's got to be troublesome given, again, their success. If this was a bad basketball team with Zion averaging 26 points and they would just remain bad without him in the lineup, then you could go, well, whatever. But they were an outstanding team, one of the better teams in the West when he was averaging 26 points per game. And now they're going to the playoffs again, a must-win game tonight. Loser of tonight's games go home, and they won't have him available for nothing other than what is between the ears. I don't want to be old school on this. I want to be a lot more open on this kind of stuff, but I can't wrap my head around it. I can't wrap my head around it. Again, we're not talking about injury here. Again, we're talking about being scared you re-injuring something. So we're talking about a healthy person. I would love to at least try to see what it would look like. Right? Wouldn't anybody on the Pelicans want to see what it looks like on the court in real time, in a real game? And then maybe take him out if you start noticing that it's a problem? All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. I don't know how much they'll mention that tonight in the broadcast, how much they'll show of Zion Williams sitting there in street clothes, but I'm curious. I'm really curious. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio, here on a Wednesday.
And Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Again on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. So you think the TV crew will make comments on Zion Williams?
If they don't, they're not doing their job.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, they're always opinionated. I love what Charles Barkley said, that the only series worth watching in the Eastern Conference right now would be Knicks Cavs.
That's it. Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
The other three, he says, pay no attention to them. Those three teams, the top three teams, are far and away better than the rest.
I'm just not going to beat those teams in a seven game series.
No.
Just not going to do it. The Milwaukee Bucks are just going to roll through whoever is the eighth seed.
Yeah.
Whoever is the eighth seed. I don't care who it is. They are going to crush them. And a sweep or a gentleman sweep, just like our guest Steve Ashburner said. That's usually the first round.
A gentleman sweep. Yeah. Maybe they get one at home,
They win one at home. They win game three at home or game four at home with their backs to the wall, and you go, all right, we'll wrap it up in five.
But these guys, they're kind of – it's weird because I can't say Shaq, Kenny, and Charles are completely old school, but they're close enough to it. They remember the physicality of what the NBA used to be back in the late 80s, 90s. I mean, Charles was there. And I just have to imagine that these guys are going to skewer Zion.
I don't
understand this.
I couldn't remember.
And where's the head coach in this saying, no, you're playing, damn it.
I can't imagine or remember an athlete saying, I'm perfectly healthy. I'm just worried that I won't be able to be my full self, so I'm keeping myself out of a game.
Right. I mean, hearing you say that out loud is stupid.
Yeah. Like again, if he was like, hey, listen, I still have a strained hamstring, it hurts. I'm not, you know, I would say, okay, I understand. All right, I'd rather see you try to play at 80%, but if you're trying to prevent future injury, okay. But he's admitting he's healthy. He's admitting he's healthy. It's just, yeah, I can't do the things that I would say, okay, great. You can't, if you're 70% with your moves, that's still better for us. What are we doing here? And what slippery slope is this that is allowing players to determine mentally if they're ready to play? They can just sit out whenever they want and be even fully healthy because mentally they don't know if they don't like what happened to the competitiveness and the forcefulness of getting out there and just going, I have a job to do and the job is to play. And sometimes it's to play physically hurt and sometimes it's to play mentally fatigued. Like, I'm not understanding this from the Pelican side of things, why they've allowed this to take place other than maybe they just want to appease Zion Williamson so he'll stay and continue to play for him, play for them for the rest of his career. I just don't understand.
Has he missed more games than played when you look at his entire career?
That's a good question.
Right?
That's a good question.
Season after season. I mean, I still don't know. Has he played a full schedule? I know
I don't think he has. He's missed an entire season due to a foot injury. So I think throughout his whole career he's been hurt.
I mean, honestly, it's to the point now. I don't even know. Is he even a good player?
Well, he was a good player before he got hurt.
Right, but I mean, he's been hurt every single moment, every single minute possible.
But my earlier point was, look, before the injury, he was an all-star. I mean, he was 26.7 rebounds and 5 assists a game. He played 29 games. Pelicans were third in the West. Not third in the division, third in the conference. All right? And then he gets hurt, and they plummet. They were 23-14 at one point, a little bit after his injury. Now, they just finished above 500. And Willie Green, the head coach, isn't saying, all right, here's what we got here. A healthy player that averages 26 points per game. Okay, now he's claiming that when he gets the ball, he's not comfortable making certain moves that have allowed him to score the 26 points per game. But I can't put him in an environment to be able to overcome that. Like, there's no scrimmage that I can put him in that's going to equate the physicality of a real NBA game. I'm certainly not going to do it with my team, right? Where I'm going to say to everybody in a scrimmage, play as physical as possible while we prep to see if Zion Williamson's brain is okay. So the only way I can do it is if I put him in those situations. And I'll monitor it, and if I notice that, yeah, they gave it to him down low and he turned the ball over. Or they gave it to him on the right blocks and his spin move wasn't effective. Like, I'll monitor it and I'll take him out of the game if I need to. If he's hurting us, then I'll take him out of the game. But even if we don't give him the basketball, his presence on the court could be helpful to us by drawing double teams and whatnot. Like, there's a million ways he can help the team without needing to do the moves. This excuse is not sounding very well. It doesn't hit me
the same way. And I think if it hits, if there's a group of people that it would hit right, it's got to be a younger generation that is now growing up in a world where their mental state is being sort of accommodated by corporate America now. Right. And so to me, that's when does Zion Williamson feel comfortable coming back to play basketball? And if you're the Pelicans, I don't think it's wrong to ask him that.
All right. Here you go. You ready?
Yeah.
So he's been in the NBA since 2019-20.
Right.
Right. That was his first season. So 4 years. Four seasons worth of basketball. You know, 82 games per year in the NBA, that's 328 games over the course of those 4 years. How many games do you think he has played?
150.
Close. I was surprised you went 100, yeah. But it's 114.
114, that's way less than that's still 35 less than I thought. It's still nearly half a season.
In the 2021 season, which was coming off of COVID, coming out of the bubble, that was his most. He played 61 games. Like you had mentioned, 21-22, he didn't play at all because he had a foot injury. The first season, he played 24. This year, he played 29.
All right. So, 29. That's it. Never came back.
I mean, if I'm the coach, if I'm the general manager, I might just cut him.
Well,
I mean, I know he's a great talent. But what's the point? I mean, I don't know how much you're paying him to sit on the bench.
They're paying him a lot of money. That's my thing. And I wonder, again, where's the level of sympathy? How much do we have for it? I don't have a lot. I don't understand the compromise. That's my biggest concern. Look, I'm not denying that he may feel like there's some hesitation against basketball. That's probably more realistic than people think, and it probably happens to a lot of guys who are overcoming an injury, right? And some of us, again, who are just normal, regular, non-athletic people, have suffered injuries where we couldn't do the same thing like we did for a while because there was a little bit of nervousness about re-injuring. I get it. What I would do if I was the Pelicans is I would say, and I would have done this before, if I knew he was healthy, I would have said, all right, we're playing Sacramento on Tuesday. You want to play 10 minutes just to see what it's like?
Right.
How about that? With just 10 minutes. I'll sub you in and out. You won't play a full 10 minutes. In and out just to see. Why not? And then,
I mean, is he practicing?
Friday, we're on the road to play Atlanta. You want to do 12? You want to see, like, or we'll do 8. Like whatever you feel like from, like, can we ease this in so that you get a feeling for what this is, we get a feeling for what this is, rather than just saying, I'm throwing the baby out with the bathwater, I'm not playing at all.
Yeah, I'm
not
benching myself.
Right? I mentally can't do it, blah, 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 I'm out. And Brandon Ingram's like, all right, don't worry, I'll just carry the team, I guess. Like, and again, I was seeing articles about this that was very sympathetic to the mental health issue. You can be sympathetic to the mental health issue and still want it fixed. I'm not saying throw him in for 38 minutes and say, tough, go do it. Why weren't the Pelicans on top of this in the final 5 or 6 games of the season? I know they were fighting. Again, they were battling a playoff position. I understand. But you still, you're not going to blow a game because he's out there for 8 minutes. And you're getting a sense of what he is and what he's doing. He hasn't played at all. He hasn't entered the game at all. He has not returned since January 2nd. He's had 3.5 months to figure out a strain and getting over a strain. He may not play for one. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt as a competitive athlete.
But he's not competitive. That's the problem.
He's not competitive. He's a heavy guy that is putting a lot of strain on his body. But for the love of Pete, if you say you're healthy and it's mental, well, let's work on the mental. And working on the mental may be putting you in the fire a little bit.